And to set the stage for that, I'd like to mention an editorial that recently appeared in the Journal of Animal Ecology. And that editorial starts like this. In 2003, some colleagues wrote a paper on extreme adult sex ratios in saiga antelope. Males had become so rare in some years that the behavior of the system became dysfunctional, and population performance suffered catastrophically. And then the editor writes, "The only other environment I know of with such heavily skewed adult sex ratios are university science faculties." That article goes on from a somewhat biological perspective. For example, he writes, "It is demographically obvious how to modify adult sex ratios. You either eradicate any differential mortality rates between the sexes at each age," this is not good news for us guys, "or you skew birth sex ratios to ensure the adult sex ratio is close to unity." That editorial goes on to sketch a quota system, which I'm not going to review here, but that is the topic that I would like to briefly address. So what is the most common objection to quotas? The most common objection that I personally hear is the objection that quotas necessarily lead to a reduction in quality. If you use a quota, it's said, you will necessarily hire someone who otherwise wouldn't have gotten that job. In Norway, we have a quota system for the boards of private companies, and we hear that that is a measure. If you force companies to put women on boards, you will necessarily lower the quality. That's the stereotype, right? But I'm here to tell you that that is exactly wrong. The research shows us that quotas, in fact, raise quality. And this is extremely important. And I think that everyone who is a friend of gender equality and gender balance work needs to learn these arguments and learn about this research. The stereotype is kind of a classic case of basing conclusions on something other than research. It's based on logic, I guess, bad logic, but logic nonetheless, and stories that get repeated, right? Oh, we had a woman president one time, but that didn't really work out, right? Those stories get told, anecdotes get told over and over again. They get told so much, they turn into what we might call anecdata. And anecdata are not very useful as we try to build our knowledge. So in the case of quotas, what does the research show? I'd like to very briefly mention three recent studies that I talk about in much greater detail on my blog, and then I'll wrap up. The first one was published in Science Magazine in 2012. It's a simulation about four different affirmative action strategies. And the core message there is that the use of affirmative action changes the applicant pool. Specifically, women who otherwise did not participate, did not apply, would choose to apply when there was an affirmative action message in an announcement. And they sort of tested some different approaches to see the difference there, and I'm not going to go into those details. But the point is that by merely mentioning affirmative action measures, it became unnecessary to use them, because it changed the applicant pool so much that there were higher quality women who applied who then got the job based on their own merits independently, who would not have applied had it not been announced in the way it was announced. Science Magazine, 2012. I discuss it on the blog. Last year, the Swedish Research Institute of Industrial Economics published a study that was called Gender Quotas and the Crisis of the Mediocre Man. And that was a paper that examined the effect of quotas in political parties, where most political parties in Sweden and also in Norway use a so-called zipper quota in constructing their list. So it goes man, woman, every other one. Now, in this research article, they develop a measure of group competency. And they demonstrate that zipper quotas raise overall competency of groups. And in particular, it raises the competency of the group of men when compared to situations where you don't use the zipper quota. Now think about that. Think about what that means. Adding a zipper quota raises the competency of the group and raises the competency of the group of men. What does that mean? That means that what's happening when you introduce that quota is that mediocre men are being replaced by high-quality women. So that pulls up the competency of the whole group, and also the group of men who remain as a group have higher competency because the weaker guys have been pushed out. So that's a specific case where a quota on the composition of a group has been demonstrated to increase the quality of the group, to increase the ability of that group to perform its task. It's exactly the opposite of the stereotype that says quotas necessarily pull quality down. Exactly the opposite. It's just a particular realization of what a lot of us, I'm sure, say, that we need to use all of society's resources. Well, here's research that shows us that when we do that, it raises quality. We're better able to perform. And I'll just briefly mention one third study that was published this year in a journal called the Journal of Economic Behavior and Organization. It's called Socially Gainful Gender Quotas. And I'd just like to read three sentences to you from that study. The authors say, we study the impact of gender quotas on what they call the acquisition of human capital. What that means is whether or not somebody applies for a job. In the absence of quotas, women consider their chances of getting top positions to be lower than men's. The lure of top positions induces even men of relatively low ability to apply, whereas women of relatively high ability do not expect to get top positions and therefore do not apply. Gender quotas discourage men who are less qualified and encourage women who are more qualified. Gender quotas discourage men who are less qualified and they encourage women who are more qualified. And in this article, then, the authors say, we provide a condition under which the net result of the institution of gender quotas is an increase in what, again, they call human capital in the economy as a whole. That is to say, an increase in the quality of your employees. Getting the most out of human capital means successfully selecting high quality. We know from the research that left to ourselves, we will stumble when we try to do that, when we try to identify quality. And the only thing to do when you're stumbling is to carry a crutch, to do some kind of intervention. We need help. And that help can take many forms. But whatever form it's going to take, it's very important to base it on research and not on anecdotes and not even on anecdata. Research, we all know, is the route to knowledge. And when we look at the research on quotas, it turns out that what we thought we knew, namely that they necessarily lower quality, is exactly wrong, both in terms of attracting stronger applicants and in terms of the properties of the group. Quotas increase quality. That's what the research tells us. So what should we do with that knowledge? Should we introduce quotas for awarding research funds, for example? The European Research, the ERC, can't figure out what to do in the face of their consistent experience that women have a lower success rate than men. Maybe they should think about quotas. In any event, considering all these arguments about quotas is going to be crucial when we want to argue in a court of law for their legitimacy, for their fairness, and for the ways in which they make society better. The only possible explanation, after all, of the fact that men are over 80% of professors are men, is that we have de facto quotas. The attempt to introduce them through the court system is just an attempt to counter that, to level the playing field It's not positive discrimination. It's leveling historic use of invisible quotas.